The Business of Marketing podcast is brought to you by Demand Exchange. Demand Exchange provides the technology, content, and expertise to identify and acquire your next ideal customer. Season 2, Episode 3, recorded live at Advertising Week Europe, features Mark Debenham, VP of Growth Marketing and Marketing Operations at Inverity, in conversation with Justin Cook, Chairman of Demand Exchange.
Hello and welcome to Advertising Week Europe, London. I'm delighted today to be joined by Mark Debenham, who is the VP of Growth Marketing and Marketing Operations at Adverity. So first of all, Mark, welcome.
Thank you. So it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Justin.
First of all, give us, in a nutshell, Adverity. What is it all about?
Yeah, so Adverity is an integrated data platform that serves to provide the best data foundation for modern marketers. It helps teams that run on data make better decisions by helping them automate their data integration. And it does that by helping marketers integrate, manage, and utilize their data at scale.
Obviously, data is an absolutely key component of every marketer's playbook today. How did you, first of all, just get into the role? Give me a bit of a career journey to date.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I can give you the chronology of it. So so my background is more in content marketing. So I used to work in the publishing industry, both on the B2B side of content marketing there, and also before that in children's publishing as well, for children's books. And then I got more and more kind of into the sort of inbound marketing style content marketing, and used to just, yeah, create thought leadership content on that side, working mainly with agencies, but also a little bit directly with brands as well. And then from that, I gravitated more towards the marketing automation side of things, which obviously brought me a lot closer to the data. And then, skipping forward a few years, then opportunity came up to join Scale Up Like Adverity and move into a role where I can combine both content to engage audiences and using data to scale that, really, to find new opportunities to grow a business and do that at an efficient scale.
That's a really interesting, sort of link between the content and the data that's generated from that interaction. I haven't met many people who've kind of made that leap. What particular kind of skills, you know, and appeal did sort of moving more into the data and the science behind the content, you know, how did that happen?
I think for me, like when I was working, like sort of in, like my background, where I was working for a brand or an agency, and then, you know, working with brands, you know, like as clients, I think, like, you're always trying to find something that is going to give you an advantage. So there's many initiatives in marketing that you can do that provide lots of benefits, but trying to gain that slight advantage in your field means that you're always looking at different data signals, whether that's quantitative data, you know, lots of numbers, or qualitative data, so, you know, lots of just direct responses and kind of stories. And so, you know, just naturally looking for those different signals, then taking that and trying to scale that to more of like a strategic position means that I just think the two go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. So for me, it's just sort of something that inevitably happened. It was inescapable for me, at least. Yeah.
I think it's fantastic because you've got to see both sides of it, right? And
yeah,
you've got to be able to correlate the two from either side. You know, if you're kind of coming at it from a content first perspective in terms of your career, but then you've got all of this kind of data science kind of in the to then bring back into the content. And I think everyone is trying to work out, how do I make my content work, right? And that's kind of what you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. And like, just sort of also, like, whenever you're creating content as well, like you can't really sort of just think, oh, I'm going to create engaging content today. Your audience is going to decide whether or not your content is engaging. So, like, when I spoke about just now about collecting data signals, a lot of that is really kind of, just to talk about in a more direct way, is more about listening to your audience and using that as a form of information and feedback. and then, right, how can I scale from that? How can I do that, but do it even better next time? And try to get that same response of like, yeah, they found that engaging. Like that actually, you know, that actually helped them with resolve their pain points or hit their pain points, you know, overcome challenges and hit their goals.
Well, there's people obviously listening to this podcast right now. So perhaps, you know, tell me a little bit about some of the real trends and opportunities that you're seeing in this space that are exciting you right now.
Right. So I think firstly, like, you know, I'd imagine that I'm not going to be the first or last person to say this. And I am probably legally and morally obliged to mention those two words. I'll give you the code for that. That's AI. I'll leave that to you to work out what that stands for. But yeah, like, obviously AI is, you know, exciting, but I think more generally, just technology in marketing, like it's never been better. It's never been better. And I think it's really a bit of a golden age at the moment where particularly like those who really value having good data in various forms and having those strong data foundations, it really kind of means that by having the technology that we have now, being able to collect, automate, scale ideas much more quickly and scale performance much more quickly, I think it's an opportunity for us to almost kind of throw out industry benchmarks around, you know, whether that's ad performance or certain engagement rates or metrics, because you know, the change isn't it's not, the technology means that it's not a goal, it's the reality of what's happening right now. So we're writing history at the moment, we're writing those benchmarks. It's uncharted territory. So I think that's exciting because it means that we're all learning. Like no one knows for sure what's going to happen in the future. And if they say they do, then they're a liar, or at best it's a lucky guess, or, you know, one that's, you know, informed by a bit of evidence, but no one knows for sure. So I think it's exciting because we're all kind of like trying to sort of work out how to navigate everything. But the technology is what's exciting me at the moment, because I think it's just a chance for those who value data to really kind of scale their ideas and be more of a more creative. So rather than just being someone who is like, right, you've got a good handle on the data, I want you to just get me this data point, do this thing. Right, rather than it being seen like as an operational function, I think it's always had a strategic seat at the table of any business decisions, but I think now it's also getting like a creative place as well. So that's what's exciting me at the moment. That's the learning that comes from that, because we're all figuring it out and getting extra creative with it. So mainly that.
And on that sort of, I suppose, kind of two sides to what you're doing from a content and the data and the performance of that content perspective, how is it like a chicken or the egg, right? Is AI kind of helping on the data to then inform and generate more content, or is the content being sort of, you know, kind of optimized through AI and then following through into the data piece? Where are you most interested or curious at the moment?
I think for me at the moment, I'm seeing it more as like a springboard for ideas. It's almost like having an extra person in the room, an extra person to bounce ideas off, with, you know, who has a wealth of experience and expertise. So like right now, and as I said earlier, like, you know, I think things are changing, you know, as the technology changes and you know, our expectations are evolving. So yeah, like, you know, I'm pretty sure any answers given right now are going to be out of date in 6 months' time or whatever. But I think at the moment it's a springboard for creativity, and you know, the only limits around this are really like how quickly we can think and how resourceful and creative we can be to get that advantage. Because as I said, we're still feeling the benefits. So I think it's that really. It's the springboard for creativity. It's like you got a paintbrush palette,
yep.
And we've suddenly got a whole load of other colors on that palette now, and the canvas is bigger as well. So yeah,
like that's a great analogy. So when you're thinking about driving revenue and growth, how does marketing play a role in that strategy?
So the marketing model that we follow, well, the marketing sales model we follow, yep, is that we respect and acknowledge the sales and marketing funnel, but we see it slightly differently. Like, one of the shortcomings I think of, say, a funnel is that you have to keep feeding the top of it to still get something out of the bottom, and it can sometimes be diminishing returns. So instead, we follow more of like the flywheel model, of having those three different stages, which is to really like prioritize the customer, attract, engage, delight, because that gives us sustained momentum. So I mentioned earlier about like listening to our audiences, listening to our customers. I think that really gives us a chance to scale, you know, the attraction, because they'll tell others about us. We'll be able to, they'll tell others about us. They'll recommend us to their network. Like, you know, that's how so many people buy these days, or, you know, people value those recommendations. So I think that sustained momentum that comes from that flywheel really kind of, I think that's the sort of thing that keeps it sustainable and efficient growth for us and for so many other companies, and our clients too.
And how do you use technology to enable that flywheel? Like, what's in your kind of stack?
A tech stack. Okay. So, we use, of course, Adverity, so our own product. So, we use that to bring together our different data sources, so our different advertising channels, our CRM data as well. So we use HubSpot. So quite heavily in the HubSpot ecosystem. We also have some other tools in our tech stack as well. So we use Typeform as well to survey our audiences. So I can give you a specific example, actually.
Yeah, that'd be great.
One of the things that we do is, like, one of the first ways that people experience our product is through a demo of it, and they'll often speak with a salesperson. So as soon as they take that step and they're like, I want to take my data and my data, you know, my data foundations to that next level, that's usually when they come to us. And what we'll do is, after they've booked it, we'll survey them automatically. So we've got some automation sort of built in there to do that. And we'll ask them about the data challenges they're trying to resolve, what their goals are, what their specific use case is, so that we can really make sure that we tailor that experience for them. And we're giving them the most valuable information, showing them the key features and benefits of our product, to make sure that they're getting the very best use of that time that they're giving to us. So that's something that's been really, really powerful for us, because it goes back to that point that I mentioned earlier around qualitative data being just as valuable, maybe more valuable than the quantitative data. So we know how they came to us, of course, and we'll ask them directly, how did you come to us? We'll just ask that outright, but also finding out exactly what they're trying to achieve, like, that's such rich information. So just the fact that they're giving us that time to say, this is my use case, this is my data challenge, having all that just makes sure that we can show them the parts of our product that are going to be most valuable to them. And we're really also setting up our sales team to make sure that they're really kind of their best place to really kind of go on that journey of consultation and advice throughout the whole of their buying journey.
I think that's a brilliant example, and that sort of mutual investment on both sides, right, is critical, isn't it, in terms of building that. That's the beginnings of a relationship. Really interesting. When you are thinking about that sort of wheel, and the demo's been done, how are you then using tech, and what processes have you got in place to then sort of propel the kind of prospect forward to be on the demo?
Yeah, so like, we'll typically send them helpful information about any specific connectors that like specific sorts of like data sources that they might be interested in, you know, whether that's Google Ads, Instagram Ads, or, you know, something related to Shopify. So we'll send them that just to add value to what they're doing in their, you know, in their job every day, like regardless of if they're going to speak to us again or not. So that's one thing that we'll do. We'll share some of our content with them in that way. We'll also follow up and ask them, you know, was there anything that we missed? We'll create bespoke pages for them about what their business is trying to achieve and what others, you know, in their industry who had similar pain points, similar goals as well. We'll create those sort of tailored reports for them, some of which we can automate, but a lot of it, we try and keep that human touch there as well. So we'll invest time and energy into actually sort of creating that specific report for them. We also encourage them to really kind of think into the future and think about what their return on investment will be. So we also have like a return on investment calculator, which we encourage them to use as well, so that they can start to build up their business case, you know, and get buy-in within their organization as well.
You've led me down to the path of my next question, which is I'm very grateful for that. I love ROI calculators. Brilliant. Fantastic. Because it leads me to my point around just how complicated now the whole sales process is, and the breadth of the buying committee, right? And so I was going to ask you, sort of, you're obviously engaged with that individual, but then there's probably, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 other individuals. How are you kind of bringing them into the wheel?
Yeah, well, do you know what, right? I'm nothing if not a hypocrite. So what I'm going to say here is, look, yeah, what I said about the flywheel, yeah, like, still think that's accurate, but buying processes can be complicated. They can be long as well. And yeah, you know, no team exists in isolation. So as you mentioned, Justin, there are going to be other stakeholders. So sometimes, you know, it maybe isn't as much of a flywheel. It can be sometimes more of a pretzel, maybe. So there's twists and turns in there. So, like typically the way that we'll bring others in is, again, like just listening, collecting that data, so storing it in our CRM, so making sure that we can bring in other people from our side at the right point as well, whether that's a solutions consultant or sometimes even, you know, someone else in the business who really understands that challenge. So for example, I'm you know, self-confessed HubSpot fanboy, right? Been using it for a long time. Sometimes questions around HubSpot come up. So, and I'm, you know, I'll try and, you know, add value to that buying journey there at that point. Or if there's someone else who's part of that decision who has a specific question there, then I'll try and help. But I think largely, like, a lot of it is really just sort of, I just asking directly, you know, like, who else is involved? Like, what do you need help with? And then I'm, you know, one quote that I keep finding myself using again and again is this one from Chekhov, which is, I'm going to get it wrong. So anyone that's listening can Google it and correct it if they want. But I believe the quote goes, don't tell me the moon is shining. Show me the glint of light off the broken glass. So show, don't tell, I think is the most powerful way to really like navigate, you know, getting, making sure the journey that you're trying to take your prospect on, you know, I think it's a case of you just need to ask directly and show them the value to make sure they can make an informed decision that it's right for them. So just, yeah, asking directly and then showing them the value at that point rather than telling them, and listening to what they need and then adapting from that.
Listen, I'm never going to forget this interview. You've created the marketing pretzel for me, and you've also just quoted Chekhov. Thank you. So when we think about you know, that flywheel, what are the ways in which you measure, and what are the metrics that you kind of tend to kind of employ?
Yeah, like, so there's many different metrics that you can talk about, and yeah, the big danger there is like analysis paralysis, right? You know, like, how do you make a decision when there's so much data available to us and so much technology to get access to it and to make it, you know, consistent and in harmony. So like for me, one of the big ones that I look at is self-reported attribution. Now, like, you know, anyone who is sure anyone that's listening to this podcast, there's a good chance that they're familiar with another podcaster called Chris Walker, who so often talks about self-reported attribution and just, and by that literally just asking people, how did you hear about us? So to just give that richer answer around where that growth exists. So that's something that we've started doing. We include that on, I think, pretty much every single one of our forms and touch points with our audiences now. And for me, it's not just so much about finding out the source of how someone learned about Adverity. It's about finding out what was most memorable for them. So the metric for me isn't so much a number, but it's a story. It's telling us that, it's telling me like how they heard about us, yeah, but also why they decided to engage with us at that point. So similar to what I was saying before about the quantitative and qualitative data. So for me, it's that's probably like the main metric mm-hmm. that I'm kind of focused on these days, really, just because it gives me that slight sort of bigger picture, not just the logistics. I can actually work out more, right, this is what we need to do more of, or maybe this is something that's a bit of, if something comes up that I don't expect in that metric, you know, or in not so much metric, but, you know, in that, mm-hmm. in that data point, then I can really like look at that and say, well, it, you know, is this maybe a bit of an overachiever? Like, can we be doing more with that? So that's, you know, that's the one that I'm looking at to really avoid that analysis paralysis.
It's a great one. And, shout out to another podcast is always good as well, right?
Yeah.
So if you were then in a conversation with your CFO, one of your other kind of colleagues in the C-suite, and linking it back to kind of revenue, how do you then kind of correlate or attribute that to revenue growth?
Yeah. So a lot of the time, like, so look, there are different metrics that I'll use, right? So sourced is one. But it has its problems, right? Because it's very much an all or nothing metric. It can massively favor marketing. It can massively favor the outbound sales prospecting side of it. And it sometimes doesn't give the full picture, but it is an important one often. So sourced is one that I'll look at. I'll also look at a few of the different influence models as well, such as the W-shaped model or the linear model. But really, with all of them, like those different ones that I'll look at, and I'll put like a, you know, I can combine them to deliver something to the board around like cost per demo, you know, cost per sales accepted opportunity, you know, cost per acquisition, or how much we're influencing them. And that's all great. Mm-hmm. And I'll always still continue to do that. But for me, it's more around taking all of them and getting a sense of the overall trend and then validating that against the self-reported attribution. So I'll report on those metrics. But really, what we're interested in as a scale-up is more, right, what's this telling us about the future? How can we forecast from this? What do we need to be doing more of, rather than like obsessing about the past and what's already happened, like what the data's telling us? It's more about where are we going in the future, like what we've seen around buying cycle lengths, and what do we need to lean into later on.
Yeah, I think you've made that point really well in terms of, you know, for you, that's absolutely critical. That's the source, right? But then you've got these relationships with product and you've got these relationships with sales, and they're going to need different metrics, sort of, you know, that's the engine that's going to drive your role, right?
Yeah.
So that's come across really loud and clear. So on that relationship between you and your team and sales and product, tell me kind of like how that works and how you like it to work.
So for us, like with sales, we capture a lot from them anyway. Like we also survey internally. We'll survey our sales team on every deal that they win and every deal that they lose, and we challenge them as well to be really honest on that. You know, what did we do well? What could we have done better? And what could we learn for next time? So we'll collect a lot of feedback there. We also do the same thing with our implementation teams. So whenever we're onboarding a client as well, and we also do the same with our product teams also do the same, and they'll share that data with us as well. So with all of that, like, again, you can get lost in some of these different stories, but trying to find, again, the most compelling point of, like, what could we be doing straight away? What's the action that we can take from that? So it's really just like sharing all that data internally, listening to different teams, putting aside any agendas, listening to your different teams internally, as well as listening to what your prospects are saying and what your customers are saying, both the good and the bad, and then taking a decision from there. So that's what we're doing, and that's what our clients do as well. And that's why I recommend to everyone listening to this podcast too.
I love it. Let's talk about your team.
Yeah.
Tell me about how you structure it, and what are the kind of real key kind of skills and capabilities that you look for?
Yeah, sure. So so my team, so I'd say largely there's two sides to it. Part of the reason I've got quite a long job title, to just recognize the importance of those two sides, right? Yeah. So there's the growth marketing side of it, which involves those who manage our paid advertising. So all the traditional sorts of marketing channels that you'd imagine, as well as sort of new ones that we try. So that's managing our Google Ads, our Bing Ads, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, as well as, you know, lots of other kind of new channels that we're trying as well. There's also a content team as well, who will create content for, like, thought leadership content, like this right now, including our own podcast. And they'll also, they'll also create content for our blog and for our website as well, as well as contributing to internal content as well, internal collateral too. There's also so you have those teams who manage the website and the content. There's also the operation side of it as well, so the marketing automation side. So they'll manage our HubSpot stack, right? We're pretty much using every little hub, every little product there. So they'll manage all of our email automation, all of our reporting as well on HubSpot, our integrations as well, and how that integrates with our product as well, Adverity, when we report there. So they'll manage that side of it, as well as the CRM, what information's going into it, keeping that data honest and true as well.
And when you're hiring, what are the kind of real key skills and attributes that you look for?
Yeah, so I'd say the main thing is just like a kind of spark of spark and a bit of curiosity, like, rather than like specific experience with a tool or anything else, because I think anything else like that could be taught. Whereas that spark and that sort of desire to challenge any silent assumptions that are already happening and thinking, what else can we be doing? That's probably the main thing. It's more of an attitude sort of skill, or not so much skill, but fit that I look for when hiring anyone. And also, just being a great person to work with, like someone who's gonna, not come with any kind of ego or sense of entitlement. Like, what I try and foster is an environment where people feel comfortable saying what they want to say. I'd hate it if anyone felt like they couldn't be honest. Don't need anyone just giving a load of hot air or yes answers. I want to hear the brutal honesty in terms of what's happening and what's going well, what's not going well, what are we doing that is a waste of time, and what others doing that we should be doing, or what's emerging as a trend that we need to start leaning into and doing. So I think really it's kind of the having that spark and that sort of, you know, scrappy attitude, where you're going to challenge what's going on, but also feeling comfortable and, you know, feeling comfortable also to not just being able to verbalize that, but also, you know, creating a safe space for others to do it as well, where people feel like they can speak their minds regardless of their personality type, if they're introvert or extrovert or anything like that.
Sounds like a great team to work in. Mm. Can you think of anything that you could kind of share that really sort of demonstrates that culture of innovation that you've sort of put into the business?
Oh yeah, actually, yeah, I can give you a really great one. Brilliant. I could do a whole separate podcast on this. I don't know if this will get edited out or not. So yeah, we have our own awards. So we've got our Addies Awards. So don't know if anyone's familiar with the US version of The Office, where they've got the Dundies, basically just rip that off. So yeah, we've got the Addies Awards, which started off as something during the height of lockdown, where we all kind of get quite creative with our backgrounds. Some of us put on a suit and everything like that. We create videos as well, and yeah, we get quite creative with our awards, and I think it's they've proven successful to the point where we've actually started doing them a few times. Like, they used to be annual, and now they're happening. They've happened like repeatedly now within the same year. So I think that's something that really kind of helps people feel comfortable. And the award titles quite often, they're lighthearted, but they also they also kind of really show that it's a safe space for people to really kind of feel comfortable bringing innovative ideas to the table. There was what's the other point I was going to mention about the Addies Awards? It's completely escaped me now. But yeah, I think that's something that helps a lot. And we started them in lockdown, and then we started doing them in person as well, which is a lot of fun. It's nice to sort of create your own kind of Oscar awards night environment as well. So
any standout sort of award winning kind of projects, initiatives that you've prepared to share?
Oh, I'm trying to think of ones that are like suitable. there was one that, yeah, I stole the name from another podcast just because it's a great pun. Metrics and Chill Award. So I thought that was a great bit of wordplay. That was for anyone who was like particularly close to some of the data. I'm trying to think of other awards. I've had a few. I don't know how many of them I'm going to share, because I might regret saying them. But I think, do you know, actually, one thing that's actually really helped bring out the personality of the awards, not so much the award titles, because I don't want to kind of embarrass anyone, even though they're all very like much, you know, nice awards. But one of the things that's been really nice, actually, is in the last award show, we asked everyone to pick a theme song, like a walkout song, and that represents how they'd feel if they won any award, because they never know what the title is going to be, because it's decided by the committee, and I'm a quarter of the committee, so it's basically me with a Word document deciding me and three other select people deciding what they get. But but they do get a say on their walkout music, and that's quite a fun, that turns into quite a fun Spotify playlist as well, and also you learn a little bit about their personality and about what song they pick as well. But I don't know if I can think of a particular award that I can share without someone, a colleague, listening back to this and saying like, oh no, why'd you tell them that about me? But I don't know, I probably won, I think I've won a few awards about my beard or about the amount of Red Wing boots that I keep on buying, and how I sort of moved from Jordan 1s to more these American made boots instead. So yeah, I think I've probably won an award like that. But
this needs to be a podcast series, 100%.
Yeah, we'll definitely do one on the awards, yeah.
So you're a leader. What would be the one piece of advice that you would give to someone who was embarking upon a career in this industry?
Um, I'm just trying to think how to answer this without being really trite and giving a bit of advice. All right, I've got something that I found myself saying a lot, and I can't think of like a pithy, snappy way of describing it, but I don't think it needs it. I think what will happen is like when someone embarks on their leadership journey is like you'll inevitably question yourself a lot. Though you'll question yourself a lot, and sometimes you'll think things and you'll wonder if it's just you. So I'd say there's a good chance that if you think something, then just because no one else is verbalizing it, there's a good chance that others think the same. So what's important is for you to make sure that you're keeping people around you who are being honest with you and giving you honest feedback about yourself. So I'd say like that's the first thing that comes to mind, like for me, that I've kind of developed myself, that you know, you need to make sure that you're creating that environment where you feel like you can talk honestly with others and others can give you honest feedback as well, because otherwise you're just internalizing these things and you're not kind of getting that kind of full and accurate picture about what you should be doing. I do want to cheat slightly and give a second piece of advice that someone else told me actually. So it was a mentor that I had, and she mentioned to me, she said to me, Mark, you spend so much time like trying to create this kind of good environment where people will share their ideas with you. And she said, you know, one of the disadvantages of that is that sometimes you can get side railed, you know, but you can get, you know, thrown off course by that, right? And it can sometimes hamper decision making. And she said, you need to be comfortable with the idea of people having an opinion on you. And she gave me this example. She said, like, if you were just driving around in like a Ford or a Fiat or something like that, she was like, you know, how would you feel about that? And I was like, yeah, just kind of fairly normal. She was like, yeah, because no one would have an opinion on you. But if you were driving around in a pink Ferrari, you know, a pink Ferrari with like white spots on it, you know, what would you think? And I was like, oh God, I think people, I'd be very self-conscious. And I think, you know, lots of people would be wondering different things about me. They'd be thinking, am I arrogant? Am I attention seeker? Am I highly successful? And she was like, yeah, exactly. So she was like, you know, people are going to have an opinion on you when you're in that position. So you just need to get comfortable with the idea, with the feeling of being uncomfortable. And when she mentioned that to me, I was a bit like, yeah, you know, it's something that I need to kind of lean into, that it's inevitably going to happen. I can't control people's perceptions of me. And so I found that like it's given me a lot more peace of mind and has helped my decision making as well.
Two pieces of really valuable advice. Mark, we're out of time.
Chekhov,
pretzels, flywheels. I mean, wow.
Yeah, Addy Awards as well. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you too.
The Business of Marketing podcast is brought to you by Demand Exchange. Demand Exchange provides the technology, content, and expertise to identify and acquire your next ideal customer.